Boy, I enjoy talking with William Henry, investigative mythologist. How about that for a title, huh? We'll be back in a moment. CERN goes online May of 2008 in Switzerland. It's a particle accelerator. It's a collider. Could it blow up the planet? Could it put a hole through the universe? Could it rip time and space? I don't know, but maybe William Henry does. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. William Henry with us. We'll take phone calls next hour with William. William, the particle accelerator, CERN, Switzerland, it's going to go online soon. I've talked to some physicists. They say not to worry. Others think, you know what? Who knows what could happen? What's your take?
Well, I think of the particle accelerator at CERN the way Dr. Leon Lederman does. He wrote a book called The God Particle, and that's what that particle accelerator is designed to do, is to reveal the secrets of this particle that explains why all matter has mass, and they not so lovingly refer to it as the God particle. But Dr. Lederman said that this is really has a biblical kind of connection. He thinks that the particle accelerator at CERN is a recreation of the biblical Tower of Babel, which was originally the ladder, tower, or gate to God. And that could be what we're looking at there at CERN, is a recreation of this story where humankind is on the verge, once again, of rediscovering the primordial secrets of the gods. And there's lots of talk about the possibility of the thing getting out of control, and they're going to be creating baby black holes there. And some say, oh, well, what if one of those black holes swallows Geneva? What if it swallows the entire planet? And then recently a couple of Russian mathematicians said...
Oh, now, this is a great story, by the way. You got to tell us about what the Russians just said this month.
Yeah, in February of 2008, a couple of Russian mathematicians said that the particle accelerator at CERN could create the conditions where it might be possible to travel backwards or forwards in time. They literally think that it's going to open tiny wormholes that would allow a limited form of time travel. And so what you get then are a couple of scientists that are on a couple of different sides of this. One say is, yes, this is crazy, but not completely crazy. There are practical problems that appear to be insurmountable to some, but to others, they're saying this could be a first step towards creating a time travel device or a Stargate device.
Gee.
I know.
What do you think of that?
Well,
crazy?
I mean, I went to CERN last summer.
Some scientists say it's nuts.
No. They're hedging, George, is what they're doing. They're saying it's crazy, but not completely. In other words, they're saying,
you know, well, why? They don't know. Do
because they?
They
don't know. I went to CERN last summer. I did a particle accelerator tour in anticipation of the opening of CERN. And when I'm there, I'm looking for just symbolism and imagery. What is the consciousness or the collective consciousness or unconsciousness of this organization reflecting in its symbolism? And I found some incredible things. The name of the primary experiment there at CERN is called the Atlas Detector. It's the world's largest scientific experiment ever. It's this massive machine, and what you do is you go down an elevator several hundred feet underground, and it opens up into this cavernous, or as they describe it, cathedral-like room or vault where this Atlas Detector is housed. And what you see on the Coast to Coast website, I have a copy of CERN's logo for this Atlas Detector, and it shows the image of Atlas, the strong man holding the image of the world or the word on his shoulder, and it's basically an image of the atom. What you see on the Coast site is a comparison between CERN's logo for the Atlas Detector and the ancient Egyptian depiction of the ladder, tower, or stairway that they called Osiris. It's virtually identical imagery. It both shows a figure with outstretched arms upholding either the atom or the symbol for the sun. And I think that what's going on here is that we are recreating this ancient ladder, tower, or stargate technology that existed in the ancient world.
Well, you might be right about that. What's your take? Do you think anything's going to happen?
Oh, I think
personally.
So. Well, yeah, I do. And another reason I think this is because when I rode down that elevator en route to the Atlas detector, I got off the elevator and standing in front of a sign that they had on the wall there. It was a sign advertising the Atlas detector or explaining what it was to do. And on that sign, it said, recreating the conditions just after the Big Bang. That is the purpose of the collider there at CERN, is to recreate the conditions that existed 1/1,000,000,000 of a second after the so-called Big Bang that formed the universe. I stood there, George, with my jaw open wide when I read that. And the reason is because according to Jewish legend, in the return of the herald or forerunner of the Christ or Messiah, that figure has a to-do list, which includes getting the Ark of the Covenant, the flask of manna, the anointing oil, the rod of God, a couple other things. But the key thing that this figure is to do is to, and I'm quoting from Ginsberg's Legends of the Jews, he says, this figure, Elijah, will blow the trumpet, and the primal light, which shone before the first week of creation, will reappear.
Hmm.
The primal light, which shone before the first week of creation, will reappear. What does it say at CERN? Recreating the conditions just after the Big Bang. They're talking about the same moment in time. And I believe that what we're seeing at CERN are going to see is a fulfillment of this biblical prophecy of the return or the reshining of this light of creation and the understanding of how creation actually occurred.
Is it possible they could put a hole through the planet, through the planet?
I don't think it's possible. What the odds of that occurring are, I don't know. It's not something I'm personally concerned with, though. I don't think that that's going to occur. I don't think they're going to fire this thing up in May, and all of a sudden we're going to find ourselves in the middle of a black hole somewhere.
I hope not. But you don't know.
No, you don't know, and that's the thing, and that's why people have to, once again, we're back where we were just before we exploded the first A-bomb, not knowing exactly what could happen. There were dire consequences predicted during that event as well. There's always been these kind of dire consequences predicted, and so far, those have not been fulfilled.
Well, and I'm concerned, too, that this thing has been delayed, This was supposed to have been online. There's something weird about that, William.
Yeah, there is. You know, that's kind of people don't like to use the word sabotage when they talk about the delay. It was caused by a mistake in a basic calculation made by the people at Fermilab who are making one of the magnets for the Atlas detector. And so, you know, Fermilab near Chicago and CERN are in a race to discover the secrets of the God particle. And some believe that the folks at Fermilab, whether by accident or by design, had a hand in slowing down the effort in Geneva. We'll see.
Yeah, we will see. Well, we'll be covering it soon.
Another example of the things that we can start clicking off that say, well, wait a minute, you know, if you're part of, if you're subscribing to the end time prophecies, here we go. I mean, we're talking about a clear fulfillment of this prophecy, and in the words of the scientists involved, a recreation of a biblical event, the Tower of Babel, where we could come away with knowledge that will enable us to ascend out of our cosmic kindergarten into first grade, cosmically speaking. We will be as gods once we have this knowledge, and whether or not the particle accelerator at CERN does open a wormhole or does lead to time travel, if we get some kind of being stepping through there, as these Russian mathematicians proposed, I mean, just buckle up is all I have to say.
You seem really pumped up about the light body effect.
I am, because for the first time really in history, George, we have an opportunity to really look at this from not only a metaphysical perspective but a scientific perspective, and we have a chance to really share this knowledge in a global way. As I mentioned earlier, every tradition has a name for this ultra-human, this divine human, but until now, the pieces have not been put together to teach ordinary individuals how to actually perform the light body effect or how to get on the path towards making that happen. And so I'm working as fast as I can right now to get a hold of this information, because, again, we're in a window of time here when this knowledge is going to be available, and we don't know how long that window is going to remain open.
And it's interesting, again, tying it back into the Mayan calendar, where they talk about this window of December 21st, 2012. There's got to be a tie-in here.
I'm convinced that there is, that what we're talking about here, when we're talking about the Mayan calendar again, is the opening of this gate or portal through which this hyperdimensional being, or this light being, if you will, emerges. And so it likely, in order for us to be able to perceive that being, we're going to have to be able to access our own divine or light self. In other words, I don't anticipate a Stargate opening in Grand Central Station and it being broadcast on CNN. I think it's going to be at a much subtler level.
Unless it looks like a wormhole and it's right in the middle of some street.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Sucking in cabs and everything else.
Hey, I'm completely open to anything at this point. It's getting stranger and stranger out there by the day. And again, it just tells us that these are the times that we've all been anticipating for so long. And just stay tuned.
Let's talk a little bit more about what these Russian scientists are worried about, and that's creating this wormhole where time travelers from the future will jump through. If that happens, so what? I mean, are they bad time travelers? I mean, what are they concerned about?
I think it's they're not so much concerned about it actually happening as they're disputing whether or not it's even possible that it could happen. I mean, you raise a really interesting question. Who would these beings be? Where would they come from?
How far in the future?
How far in the future? And all those sorts of questions. And that's really fun to think about, because we're now starting to learn so much about the quantum realm and the possibility of beings being able to jump into the quantum realm, which, by the way, the Egyptians referred to as the field or the dimension of the blessed. Other terms for it are the divine matrix, the zero-point lattice, crystallized space. I mean, we know a lot about this space, but we just don't know if there are inhabitants there or really who they are. And this is what's so valuable about going into the ancient texts and stories, is because they describe this realm and describe how we enter into that realm and the types of beings that live there. And to me, it's ultimately very positive, because, as I mentioned in Jesus' statement, the only way you're going to open this gate is to be a being of pure love. And he also explicitly gave us an idea about what these beings in that realm are like. It's called the Sermon of the Mount, where he talks about the blessed beings as being peacemakers, beings of pure heart, and other aspects of their divinity. So from that perspective, I don't look at this so much as a Trojan horse, that all of a sudden maybe these nasty beings have beamed us a technology and finally got us to build this technology, the particle accelerator at CERN, so that they can all of a sudden rush into our world and consume us. No, I'm looking at more the positive aspect of it, that ultimately to get into this realm, you have to be a benevolent being. In fact, you have to be a being of pure love, a perfected being.
Well, that's all very possible, and your research, of course, in this area continues, does it not? And how long will you battle away at this? Will you stop at the end of 2012?
Oh, no. You know, I was working on my retirement plan the other day, and the guy asked me, when do you want to retire? I said, well, one of my role models is Zechariah Sitchin. He's in his early 80s. He just published a book last year, so I'm thinking I'm going to plan on retiring in my mid-80s.
Well, you know what? I'm like you. I'm just going to keep going. I said I'm going to keep going until they take me out in a gurney one day,
right.
Hopefully after a commercial break.
And you'll be turned into me, and I'll be saying, well, George, remember 60 years ago when we did that first interview? And
yeah, right. The one I want to forget.
No, I mean, there's life beyond 2012. I mean, I really do believe we are looking at the dawning of a new day. It's a new beginning. It's not an end time. It's a beginning time.
When we open up the phone lines next hour, you know, of course, everybody can chat with you about the issues at hand here, but I'd like to get everyone's take on this particle accelerator. I find this to be just fascinating.
Well, and I think it's important that we get up to speed on it, too, and because there is such a consciousness element about this. I mean, when I was at Fermilab in Chicago, one of the scientists was giving me a tour of the place, and you know, he half-jokingly said, I asked him, well, what's it going to take to find the God particle? And he said, well, the God particle will be found if it wants to be found, hinting that there's an element of consciousness here. And one of the things I like about what's going on at CERN is that after World War II, they witnessed the Nazi scientists being taken to the United States.
Right.
And they knew if the Nazi scientists were going to the United States, they were there to build weapons. And so they watched this parade of high-energy physics types leaving Germany, going to the United States. So they organized the European Center for Nuclear Research, and its organizing principle was that we will only use our findings for peaceful purposes. So it's kind of the counterbalance to what the black ops are doing here, what the black projects are involved with in their high-energy physics stuff. So I look at that as kind of a hopeful sign. Now, you know, people can say, well, that's kind of Pollyannish, but, well, that's the way I take at face value what they say. And one of the key images that they have at CERN, I took a photograph of, one of the key symbols was of the dove, which is the symbol of peace, but also the symbol of the Holy Spirit, with the symbol of the God particle coming out of its mouth.
Well, listen to this. It says, and this is a summary from so many people who are thinking about this. It says the upcoming Large Hadron Collider at CERN could be dangerous. It could produce potentially dangerous particles such as mini black holes, stringlets, and monopoles. A CERN study indicates no danger for Earth, but its arguments are incomplete. The reasons why they are incomplete are discussed in this paper. And this paper goes on and on and on. But mini black holes.
Yeah. I mean, think of it. A black hole suddenly opens and swallows Geneva, completely out of control. Maybe the thing just gets loose and starts running around the planet. I mean, this isn't necessarily a sci-fi scenario here that we're talking about. But you know what, George? I mean, that's one of the things that, getting back to that that prophecy about the herald or forerunner of the Christ or Messiah, who will reveal this light which shone before the week of creation, what they're doing there at CERN. Another of his missions is to raise Korra and his band from out of the inner earth. And when I researched that, I was surprised to find that, once again, the Bible is always talking about opening up holes in space. In this story, Moses had just brought the Ten Commandments down. Korah, it was his cousin, the wealthiest man alive. And he approached Moses and said, look, you know, we just left Egypt in one tyrant. Now you're acting like a tyrant all over again with these Ten Commandments. And Moses says, well, we'll get in touch with Yahweh here and let him settle it. And he tells him to show up the next morning at the tabernacle, and Yahweh would settle this debate about whether Moses is going to become a tyrant with the Ten Commandments or not. Well, Yahweh shows up, and he opens a hole in the inner earth, and Korah and 250 of his men, along with their tents and camels, are swallowed by this hole. And this Jewish legend or prophecy says that presumably Korah and his band are still parked in stasis somewhere, maybe in some kind of wormhole or something, or perhaps a black hole, and are awaiting the time when that hole reopens and they come back out of their stasis. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that that's what's going to happen at CERN when they open this particle accelerator and this possibility of opening of a time travel hole or a wormhole, but it's really weird the way this keeps coming up over and over again.
When we come back, tell us how we can achieve the light body effect ourselves, William Henry. We'll be back. And, of course, our guest tonight, William Henry, his website, loaded up, williamhenry.net. Next hour, we'll open up the phone lines, and I would like some of you to react to what you think could happen at CERN Switzerland when they flip the switch and turn on that particle accelerator. Whoosh, could create one kind of a mess. Anyway, we'll be back with William in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. William, let's talk a little bit about how we can achieve our own light body effect, if that's possible, is it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, there are some people who believe that before Adam and Eve fell and were evicted from the Garden of Eden and that gate was closed to us, that we had bodies of light, or bodies clothed with light, and that as a result of the fall, we had lost that. So from that perspective, this is our original condition, our original primordial condition. But the place that I turn to for direct knowledge about how to actually achieve the light body is the Tibetan Great Perfection tradition, or what they call the rainbow body or light body tradition. And what they tell us is that, first of all, there's no book that you can read about how to do this. The knowledge about how to do this is always transmitted visually and in symbols. Like, for example, the Dalai Lamas, they had what they call the secret temple of the Dalai Lama, which is behind the Potala Palace in Lhasa, Tibet. And this is the place where the Dalai Lamas would go to learn this. And it was essentially a room 360 degrees all around covered with imagery that portrays this process. But they simplified it even more than that, George. They said that basically to achieve this light body, to grow it or cultivate it, requires three things. First, you have to be introduced to your own nature. You have to first get the idea or understanding that this is possible for everybody. In fact, this is who we truly are. And when we're in the human body, we are not in our true bodies. Our light body is our true self. And there is a light being within you that is operating the machinery, the biological machinery of the body. So you have to imagine it. The second thing is you have to believe this. You can't remain in doubt about this, the Tibetans say.
If you doubt or if you're negative, it's not going to happen.
Exactly. And then the third thing is you have to live it. You have to continue to remain in this state of belief about this, and you have to live your life with the expectation and the hope in your heart that this is going to happen for you. And what that does is it causes you to make different choices and decisions with your life. It automatically sends you into a higher plane or a higher realm, and you recognize that, wow, this existence, while brief, is a wonderful existence, but what it's about is our continued existence in another dimension or another realm.
We can develop our consciousness beyond the body, ascend to these incredible planes. I think remote view, we can be more intuitive, we can do things in our dream state. I think the light body effect encompasses all of that.
It does, because when the ancients talk about putting on the light body or this whole armor of God, they say that, yeah, once you do this, you will have the ability to remote view, you will be able to heal the sick, you'll be able to offer this cloak or light transmission to your loved ones, you'll be able to manipulate matter and predict the future. All of that, according to Wally Budge, the great Egyptologist at the turn of the 20th century, who looked into this ancient belief, especially in Egypt, and said this is what they could do once they actually had these abilities.
And once you do, it'll take you on one incredible journey, William.
Absolutely. And that's what makes it so exciting, is that any of the things that we just described, remote viewing, learning to activate your healing abilities to heal yourself or to heal others, learning how to manipulate matter, all of those put you on the path, ultimately, towards achieving your light body,
body. I did an interview. Mark Zakri, who comes on the show a lot, writes books about the Twilight Zone, Twilight Zone Companion, and David Simpkins, who's been a L.A. Hollywood executive producer for some great TV shows. They've got a new internet interview thing going on now, and I'm one of their interviews. Once I realize when they're going to put that up, I'll let everybody know. But
cool.
As he was interviewing me, he talked about the program Coast to Coast, and he said, George, when I'm at home listening, I can feel the energy of this.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little bit, I think, of what you're talking about, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no question. Coast has a consciousness. It is an entity unto itself. It's a educational entity. It's a being that is here to accelerate our growth and to help us all on our path.
It's like Gaia. It's alive.
Exactly. Exactly.
You've got a picture that you sent us that's up there on the coasttocoastam.com website after you click the link under feature article, and the last picture is this particle accelerator. Now, for a moment, I thought I was looking down into a hole or a pit.
Right.
Then I saw the little man on it. This thing, and then I saw the stairways. It's huge.
Oh, it's enormous. Yeah, absolutely enormous. I can't remember how many stories tall it is. Maybe 8, 10 stories, something like that. Yeah. Absolutely huge. It's hard to photograph.
Is it a single-purpose facility? I mean, is it going to just do this one thing and that's try to do what it does with, you know, accelerating particles?
That's what we're told. And the reason
it's too big for that. They're doing something else.
Well, I mean, when I looked at it, it's like, oh, isn't that interesting? We've built a 10-story pineal gland.
It's a time machine.
Yeah, right. And what I wanted everyone to appreciate is that this ATLAS detector that we're looking at, which is part of the Large Hadron Collider there at CERN, the pattern of it, symbolically, it's a circle with 8 rays extending from it.
As you look into it, you're right.
As you look into it. What is the Maya symbol for the galactic center?
It's exactly that.
It's exactly that. And what the Maya are saying is that out of this 8-rayed symbol comes this serpent rope / wormhole with this enlightened being popping out. What are these Russian scientists saying? Well, this 8-rayed gizmo there at CERN is actually a time travel device, and out of it is going to emerge some kind of being or something, some time travelers. And what I matched it up with is the early Christian depictions of the transfiguration of Jesus, where he turns into a light being and is portrayed in front of the almond-shaped gateway that also has, invariably, 8 rays.
It looks like a time machine. It
looks like some kind of a stargate or wormhole image here. And in fact, what we're looking at when we see these transfiguration images, and by the way, I have a gallery of them on my website, williamhenry.net, what we see is that it's actually a two-step process. We see Jesus putting on this garment of light, this robe of glory, the seamless garment, all the other names for it, and it is that light body that then enables us to open the gateway behind him.
I've got to read the story about the Russians that you told us about, because I found it. It's
okay.
It's in a newspaper called the Daily Mail.
Uh-huh.
Here it goes. It says, time travel could be a reality within just 3 months, according to Russian mathematicians. They believe an experiment that nuclear scientists plan to carry out in underground tunnels in Geneva in May could create a rift in the fabric of the universe. The European Organization for Nuclear Research, CERN, hopes its atomic smashing tests, which aim to recreate the conditions in the first billionth of a second after the Big Bang created everything, will shed invaluable light on the origins of the universe.
Right.
But the Russian mathematicians say the energy produced by forcing tiny particles to collide at close to the speed of light could open the door to visitors from the future. According to Einstein's general theory of relativity, any large amounts of matter or energy will distort the space and time that surrounds it. If the energy or mass is large enough, it is claimed that time can be distorted so much that it folds back onto itself, creating a wormhole or a time tunnel between the present and the future. But Dr. Brian Cox, a member of CERN and one of Britain's leading experts in particle physics, says he's highly skeptical about the Russian claims, calling them nothing more than a good science fiction story. So there you have it.
Yep, there you have it. And then they go on to say, they quote other scientists when they ask them about that, and they say, yeah, it's crazy, but not completely.
See, I'm not sure we know enough about wormholes that we can flip this machine on with all certainty and think everything's going to be fine.
No, you're right. I mean, again, it's like exploding the A-bomb, but one of the points that, you know, I like to make here is, isn't it just incredible that we have reached a level of consciousness where we can at least have discussion about this?
Yeah, but it's exciting.
Yeah, it's exciting at the same time as it's potentially dangerous. And, you know, again, this goes to the whole idea that I expressed in Revelation 2012, is that, hey, the Mayans are saying wormhole consciousness, Stargate consciousness is what 2012 is all about. And so here we have CERN coming right on time. You know how I got to CERN originally, George? It was through the Maya prophecy again about the serpent rope, because they talk about this serpent and it winding its way around what they describe as the tree of life, which is another image from the book of Genesis, the tree of knowledge with the serpent of wisdom in it. And the Maya say that this serpent rope spits something they call cosmic sap. Cosmic sap. I'm thinking, what is this, like the blood of the cosmic tree or something? And so I go to Google, I type in cosmic sap, and lo and behold, here I discover sap is an acronym for subatomic particle.
Well, you know what? Could this be like a Y2K where it comes and goes, nothing happens?
2012?
Yeah, 2012, and the accelerator first.
No, I think we're going to, there's going to be some solid science that comes out of the search, not only at CERN, but at Fermilab, and they're talking about even bigger, larger accelerators beyond that. So, no, that's really solid stuff, whereas Y2K was, you know, just basically a computer glitch that everybody kind of blew out of proportion. 2012, no, I don't think it's, I think it's something that is, it may be even beyond our imagination, this shift and this transformation that we're all undergoing right now.
Well, William, you might be right about some of these too, but, you know, we're coming up on all these things. This May event is going to be pretty exciting. We've got to get a number of us together for a program on that, on the day that they flip that switch.
Yeah, I would love that. That would be really not only intriguing, but I think it would be important to do that because, again, I think consciousness is a part of this and that we actually have the ability to influence the events there.
You know, I just wonder if... You know, they flip the switch and nothing happens.
Something's going to happen. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Now, whether a wormhole opens or the black hole, there's no question that these protons are going to go slinging around this 17-mile underground ring or tunnel and that these interactions will happen. It will take a little while for the actual results of this experiment to be made known or even to be elucidated by the scientists, but there's no question that this is going to happen, and we're going to be better for it, hopefully.
I like the way you prefaced, hopefully. Is there a possibility something could happen?
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. We're rolling the dice in some of these instances, and again, this is why upgrading the public consciousness about the kind of science that we're doing on this planet right now, not just in high-energy particle physics like at CERN, but in genetics, neuroscience, nanotechnology, artificial intelligence. We're in a whole different realm here. We're in a new dimension. We just got to wake up to that.
When you go to these various places, like Egypt, for example, are you hunting for something or you're just visiting? What do you do there?
It depends. I have several different levels of missions, usually, of whether, like in Egypt, I'm looking for certain photographs that I can share with people and pass around for study among various people. That fulfills a really important role because a lot of this stuff is inaccessible to some researchers, so I always try to share what I have. So that's usually job one. Two, personally, I'm just going to these places just to feel them. I'm leading a tour not only to Egypt in April, but going to Sacred Scotland and Stonehenge in August. And again, inviting anybody who wants to join us, come on. And there, the mission is British Museum. There's some key photographs I'm looking for in the British Museum of ancient Iraqi or Sumerian artifacts. And then it's just to go to Stonehenge and feel the place. I mean, a friend of mine was there recently and photographed what she thinks of as a light being at Stonehenge that gave the message that now is the time where we're going to reveal ourselves, and orbs are just the beginning. That's the thinning of the veil, and that you will in your lifetime see light beings walking among you.
Well, you never know. Ingo writes from Washington, this accelerator, George, sounds like it could be a modern-day Tower of Babel, or Babel. Mm-hmm. To me, it sounds like the scientists are playing God. What do you think?
Well, there's no question. I mean, it was Dr. Leon Lederman, again, who said this project, the search for the God particle, is a recreation of the Tower of Babel, which was mankind gathering together, humankind gathering together to build a ladder, tower, or stairway to heaven. But at that time, the Israelite God Yahweh said he wasn't ready for company. So he demolished our tower and separated humankind by language. And after that, the word Babel no longer meant ladder, tower, or stairway, or gate. It meant confusion or nonsense. And so we've all been conditioned to think that interdimensional travel, stargates, wormholes, gateways is total nonsense. And in fact, science still tries to uphold that, but now they're hedging. Now they're opening up and saying, well, wait a minute, maybe this is possible. And I also like to mention that Steven Spielberg is going to play a role in this as we run up to 2012 here. His next big film is called Interstellar, and it, too, is about wormholes.
He's got his finger on the pulse.
You got it.
Danny from Blue Springs, Missouri writes, would you know if this accelerator could be used as a partial beam weapon?
No, I don't. I don't know about that. Again, if you take the words of the folks running it there at CERN, their interest is purely for peaceful purposes. Reading between the lines, they're trying to offset what is being done in the black world in the United States based on Nazi technology.
See, I think they could crack the planet like an eggshell.
Well, you know, we'll just have to see.
Don't you go out there and broadcast for us and send back reports?
Sure.
I'll stay here.
But, you know, at CERN, there's only one piece of symbolism or religious imagery there, apart from the dove with the symbol for the God particle emerging from it. They have a statue of Shiva there. Shiva standing in the ring, stomping out ignorance. Excuse me.
Yeah. I've got you talking all night, William. Take a little drink of water.
A little drink of water.
And you'll be back.
It's only Shiva that they portray there.
Only her.
Yep.
Or it.
Only it. Shiva, the god stomping out ignorance. Yes. That's their purpose.
The work that you've done over the years. Now, how long have you been at this?
I've been publishing for over 10 years, researching for 20.
10 years you've been publishing, researching for 20. That's a long, long time, William Henry.
Just getting started.
Yeah, you are. You're still young.
45.
That's, you're a baby. you're indeed. Tell us a little bit about the WilliamHenry.net website that gets so many hits.
Well, I think of it as a gateway or a portal. I have a welcome video on the site that tells you more about here is finding the knowledge, putting our heads together, and creating this awakening within ourselves, and essentially focusing on the betterment of humankind by revealing this ancient knowledge.
Well, I got to tell you, William, it is magnificent work. You're going to Egypt April of 2008. You're going to be at a conference in Nashville. Also April 2008, my gosh, you're busy. In Scotland and Stonehenge, as you said, August of 2008. A lot of trips coming up for you this year, my friend.
Well, it's a lot of trips. What it is, it's research, really. It's a chance to interact with people. I went to France last year, George, with the head of the big brain, the top physicist.
You went to Rennes Le Chateau?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that.
And one of my guests was one of the top physicists in the world. He works for one of the major weapons manufacturer, and he's their big brain. And, it's just incredible to be able to tour a place with someone like that and to spend 2 weeks just literally picking their brain. And that's what is so exciting about these tours. And my Nashville conference is a gathering of minds, gathering of people who are trying to put together what I call Stargate metaphysics, the secrets of enlightenment. People come from 16, 19 states, and we fill up a room and spend a couple of days together and just start working this together.
All right, stay with us. We're going to be back with the final hour with William Henry. We'll take your phone calls and also get your reaction as well to this particle accelerator that's going to be switched on in May of this year. Whoosh.